Welcome to Music History Monday for September 9th, 2019. I'm Bob Greenberg, and the title for today's podcast is Elvis and the Tube. On September 9th, 1956, 63 years ago today, Elvis Presley made his first appearance live on The Ed Sullivan Show. It has been suggested that this appearance on that evening, 63 years ago, marked the ascendance of rock and roll as the dominant musical genre in the Western world. Television changed everything. Yes, we all know that. But in thinking about this post, I've realized that so ubiquitous are the screens around us that we should remind ourselves of how recent a phenomenon TV is and the degree to which it has forever changed not just our everyday lives, but our very perceptions of time, distance, shared experience, and collective memory. Television did not become a national mass media in the United States until the mid-1950s, and it didn't become a cultural force until the 1960s. Between 1949 and 1969, the number of American homes with at least one television set rose from under 1 million to over 44 million. During that same period, the number of commercial television stations in the United States went from 69 to 566. Correspondingly, during this same period, advertising revenues paid to American television stations and networks increased from $58 million to $1.5 billion. The television industry, as we understand it today, wasn't in place until the 1960s. Since the 1960s, TV has evolved from a fairly homogeneous mass media dominated by the big three networks, for you youngsters, those would be ABC, CBS, and NBC, to, in the words of James Poniewozik, chief television critic for the New York Times, quote, "The polarized, zillion-channel era of cable news fisticuffs and reality shocker entertainment," unquote, that it is today. In the process of its evolution, television has, for better or for worse, gone a long way towards eliminating regional cultural differences and accents. For example, we read that Johnny Carson's Iowa/Nebraska twang became the standard American accent thanks to his 44-year television career. Television has changed our sense of time and distance, in that with the advent of live television, there is no such thing as time or distance, as we have come to expect instant updates from every corner of the globe, an expectation now fulfilled to a fault by our smartphones. Television changed forever the way we consume information and entertainment, as we have come to expect instant oral, that's oral with an A, instant oral gratification and visual gratification. Among the many earth-shaking changes it has wrought, television has given our species instant and effortless access to live events, allowing us to see and hear life-changing current events from the comfort of our homes as they happen. In last week's Dr. Bob Prescribes post, which, by the way, can be read at patreon.com/robertgreenbergmusic, I mentioned that on Sunday, November 24th, 1963, the 9-year-old me was among the many millions of people who saw Jack Ruby shoot and kill President Kennedy's alleged assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, in the basement of the Dallas police headquarters. A crazy thing for a 9-year-old child to see live on television. But there you have it. Live television has given each of us shared access to a range of events unimaginable before the advent of TV. We all have our short list of crazy, life-changing events seen live on TV. Off the top of my head, and excluding sports, here are some of mine. On Sunday, February 9th, 1964, My Family of Five was among the 72 million viewers tuned to the Ed Sullivan Show to see the American debut of the Beatles. Speaking personally, that broadcast was my entree to not just the Fab Four, but to rock and roll. It was, for me, a life-changing experience, one that resonates to this day. Here's a stupid question. Was there any TV not tuned to the moon landing on July 20th, 1969? I get goosebumps just writing about it. What an unbelievable and breathtaking event that was. When the lunar module touched down and Neil Armstrong said from a 250,000 miles away, quote, "Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed," unquote, my father started to cry. Watching it just now on YouTube, I could not restrain my tears. What an incredible shared moment that was for all of us. A live, real-time demonstration of courage, ingenuity, and the human spirit at its best. On August 8, 1974, we watched Richard Nixon deliver a 16-minute speech during which he resigned his presidency. A friend with whom I was watching said, "Well, finally, the nightmare is over." And for a while, at least, it was. On November 10th, 1989, we watched as the first concrete slab that made up the Berlin Wall, which had stood for 10,316 days, was removed. All along the 27 miles of wall that divided East and West Berlin, another 69 miles of wall separated West Berlin from the surrounding East German countryside, people hammered and chipped away at the thing. I remember shaking my head while I watched. It was unbelievable, unimaginable, and we all witnessed it together. As we witnessed United Airlines Flight 175 hitting the South Tower of the World Trade Center at 9:03 a.m. Eastern Time on September 11, 2001. By the time the remaining North Tower collapsed at 10:28 a.m., an estimated 2 billion people were watching live worldwide. Television has allowed us to witness and, from a remove, to actually participate in live royal weddings, coronations, and funerals, to observe hurricanes and floods and fires as they unfold, to be eyewitness to protests and riots, and perhaps most idiotically of all, to witness O.J. Simpson's two-hour car chase in his white Ford Bronco across the freeways of Los Angeles, as captured by over a dozen news helicopters and broadcast live to over 95 million viewers. It has been suggested that September 9th, 1956, 63 years ago today, quote, is the day that rock and roll truly established itself as the dominant musical genre in America and therefore the Western world, unquote. The day Elvis Presley made his first appearance on America's most popular TV show, a variety show hosted by a former journalist and Frankenstein impersonator named Ed Sullivan. In fact, by the time he appeared for the first time on the Ed Sullivan Show, Elvis Aaron Presley, 1935 to 1977, had already appeared three times on national television, on the Dorsey Brothers Show, the Milton Berle Show, and the Steve Allen Show, the latter on July 1st, 1956. Steve Allen did not like rock and roll or Presley's act, but he needed a ratings boost as his Sunday evening show on NBC was up against Ed Sullivan's on CBS. Sullivan could have had Elvis first, but he didn't like rock and roll or Elvis's act either. So when Elvis's manager, Colonel Tom Parker, offered Sullivan a single show for $5,000, Sullivan turned him down, prompting Elvis to sign on with Steve Allen. Well, thanks to Presley's appearance, Steve Allen's ratings went through the roof at Ed Sullivan's expense. Sullivan, realizing he'd made a major boo-boo, signed Elvis, but at a cost, $50,000 for three appearances. That first appearance took place 63 years ago today. More than 60 million people tuned in to watch, some 82% of the evening's TV audience, a rating that dazzles us to this day. The audience saw neither Elvis nor Ed Sullivan in Sullivan's New York studio. Presley was in Hollywood filming his first movie and thus performed from a local CBS studio. Ed Sullivan was on medical leave, recovering from a head-on collision suffered a few weeks earlier. The Oscar-winning English actor and director Charles Laughton subbed for Ed Sullivan that evening. He introduced Elvis by saying, quote, "Away to Hollywood to meet Elvis Presley," unquote. The scene shifted to Elvis wearing a plaid jacket that made him look like a used car salesman. After acknowledging that being on the Sullivan Show was, quote, "probably the greatest honor I have ever had in my life," unquote, he began his three-song mini-set with Don't Be Cruel. As for the oft-told story that Presley was shown only from the waist up, so to spare the youth of America from his hip-grinding and grunt-and-groin persona, well, don't you believe it. While the cameras stayed mainly on the top of Elvis's body during the first number, those cameras showed him full length in his final two songs. Presley's second appearance on Ed Sullivan took place on October 28th. It garnered huge ratings, but set off a firestorm. Presley's gyrating hips were in particularly fine fettle that evening, and the press had a field day, attacking both Elvis and rock and roll for being depraved and animalistic despoilers of America's youth. Riots took place in both Nashville and St. Louis, where Elvis was burned in effigy. It was during Presley's third and final appearance on Ed Sullivan's Show in January of 1957 that he was shown only from the waist up. It has been suggested that this was done not on orders from Ed Sullivan, but through the connivance of Presley's manager, Colonel Tom Parker, who believed that by so censoring Elvis, his sexual notoriety would only increase. And increase exponentially it did. Elvis Presley's impact on the planetary culture was greater than that of any other individual during the second half of the 20th century. His look, his manner of singing in equal part Black American blues, Christian gospel, and Southern country, his sexually provocative way of moving, and the intensity and abandon with which he performed are all now part of the essential iconography of the 20th century. More than any other single person, it was Elvis who lit the fuse that exploded into the sexual revolution of the 1960s. Jerry Rubin, one of the Chicago Seven, wrote in his book, Do It, Scenarios of the Revolution of 1970, quote, "Elvis Presley ripped off Ike Eisenhower by turning our uptight young awakened bodies around. Hard animal rock energy beat surged hot through us, the driving rhythm arousing repressed passions," unquote. Oh my goodness. Rubin's statement addresses something that sent shudders of terror through parents everywhere. Presley represented sexual liberation, and once that genie escaped the bottle, no amount of parental or societal pressure could put it back. Elvis Presley's record sales say it all. Between 1956 and 1961, he had 38 gold records, selling 115 million discs worldwide. Elvis made rock and roll an international phenomenon, and he remained the dominant force in rock and roll until the so-called British Invasion of 1964, which saw, among many other groups, the arrival in North America of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, who, for our information, made their first appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show 8 months after the Beatles, on October 25th, 1964. Thank you.